Hey, it's Dan Patrick. Here's your chance to score with Maaco Auto Body Shop. Join us in San Francisco for Super Week. That's right, a trip for two, airfare, hotel stay, and VIP access to see us do our show. Maaco also giving away 5 free paint jobs and 10 swag bags. Enter daily for a chance to win. Get official rules at danpatrick.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Open to contiguous U.S. D.C. residents 18 or over. Ends 11/23/25.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
The bank crisis of some days past, is it over? The Wall Street Journal headline, few banks are hedging interest rate risk. Subhead, a recent paper focuses on how banks handle rising rates. Years and years of low interest rate, practically zero, and then suddenly, in sweeping jumbo hikes, we're now 5%. And we're facing another hike possibly within weeks. At the same time, Financial Times, the London paper, depositors pull nearly $60 billion from three U.S. banks as Apple raises pressure. Charles Schwab, State Street, and M&T report outflows as savers hunt for better rates, searching something better than under 1% for perhaps the new savings accounts at Goldman Sachs or Apple for 4.15%. The gist of this is that the money is moving around, cash money is moving around, and the public's doing it. Sometimes in the past, that's been described as something approaching a bank run, when people don't trust their banks and say, give me my money, I'll keep it at home, or I'll take it someplace where it's safe. Joseph Sternberg, member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal, he writes political economics. He's in London, where I have no reason to believe there's a bank run. But you never know. Joe, a very good evening to you. These discordant headlines. So I ask the big obvious question. Is the presumption at the Journal, your editorial page, and your measure of the banking crisis of some weeks past, that it is done with, over, or are we just in a calm before the next phase? Good evening to you.
Hey, John. Well, I mean, certainly we should all hope that it's over because no one should want to experience a financial crisis or a panic. And at the moment, it's difficult to see exactly what could go wrong at this point that hasn't already. So from that perspective, you can understand why people are trying to be guardedly optimistic. I think against that, you have to put everything that we know from economic history that suggests that what we are in the middle of right now is a rotation out of a very, very loose monetary environment, which had a lot of distorting effects on asset prices, whether it was stocks or bonds or property or investment decisions or any of the rest of it. And we're shifting into a tighter environment that's going to require very different decision making. And that process has usually been much messier than what we have experienced so far, which is why I suspect a lot of people are still on edge. And, you know, thinking about it that way, put some perspective on this issue of deposits floating around in the system, because it isn't the case, as would be true in a bank run, that consumers or depositors are losing faith in their banks. Instead, they're just deciding that they don't like their banks very much. And that is because they are finding a lot of depositors that their own bank is offering less interest now in this higher rate environment than other banks or other investment opportunities might be offering. And so that seems to be the thing that is triggering this big reallocation of people's savings within the system. I mean, an early harbinger of that was some of the deposit flight from banks like Silicon Valley Bank last month, where there was reason for depositors to worry about the health of the bank. But more broadly, even when people aren't worried about whether their bank is stable, they're unhappy that it isn't more generous with the interest rates that it's offering them on their savings. And so that capital in conditions of rising rates is going to have to find its way to a new home. And that is showing up as this very disruptive process of some banks losing deposits, other banks gaining them, but also a lot of money that used to be bank deposits flowing into things like money market funds, where it's leaving the banking system entirely.
The Silicon Valley Bank seems to be the departure point. What I learned from this new paper is by Professor Jay of USC's Marshall School, Professor Matvos of Northwestern University's Kellogg School, Professor Piskorski of Columbia Business School, and Professor Serro of Stanford Graduate School of Business. What they've identified is that the Silicon Valley Bank hedged 12% of its securities portfolio by the end of 21, but at the end of 22, only 0.4% was hedged. The professors declare this a gamble. We see the gamble did not pay off. Silicon Valley Bank crashed. The run on the bank overwhelmed it, and hence all the anxiety. But the professors point out that this is not an outlier, that many other banks may be at risk of this. They don't name them, but the Wall Street Journal does mention that investors are taking a fresh look. Here's the list, Joe. Bank of America, a large bank, Zions Bank Corp, Utah and Comerica of Texas, as they report first quarter results. So behind the results the banks are reporting is the suspicion that Silicon Valley alone wasn't gambling by not hedging or by not leveraging their portfolios. That I guess the banks just got used to this easy money from all the 0 years. Can we excuse them by saying they were slow to the draw?
I think that this conclusion that a lot of banks were not properly hedging their exposure to rising rates is interesting for a couple reasons that actually really clarifies what's going on here. One is to understand what hedging can and can't accomplish. I mean, hedging is a form of financial insurance, which means that you have to have bought it before the insurable event in order for it to work. So I think that the first issue that you run into here is that there do seem to be some financial institutions around where their management had understood all along that the ultra-low interest rates and the quantitative easing were not sustainable and that a change was going to have to come eventually. And so they took steps throughout that easy money period to try to prepare themselves for the possibility that rates would go up, but understand that that is not really hedging the way economists and market types usually talk about it so much as that is business planning. Now, with the hedging, what you would be talking about is using various derivatives positions to try to protect yourself so that if your main assets lose value, at least you have these other hedged positions that will gain value to offset some of the loss. But again, that's a form of insurance. It's really only feasible to buy before the event, and it can be quite expensive if you buy it too early, because then you're hedging against something that hasn't happened, and shareholders might have wondered about that. And then you also have the problem that with a lot of financial hedges, that insurance expires after a while. You might open a hedge position that is open for 6 months or a year, but eventually you need to roll it over. And when you roll it over, you are just as exposed to changes in the interest rate environment as you were before. All you've really managed to do is delay the pain. I mean, a good example of that is actually airlines that often will hedge their fuel costs. So if the fuel cost goes up for a couple of months, the airline company is okay. But if they go up for a sustained period, eventually those hedges expire and you're still buying at a higher price. So I think that the key point here is that, yes, there are steps that banks, some of them could have taken to reduce or delay the pain that they would experience from higher interest rates. But ultimately, it was going to happen eventually anyway.
I learned entertainingly from a book, The Panic of 1907. This is before the Federal Reserve, by Robert Bruner and Sean Carr, that a bank run is a spectacular event and that all banks eventually become vulnerable during a bank run, no matter how secure their assets are. the banks need to mutually support each other, which was the whole idea of the Federal Reserve. Even before Cortelyou, then Secretary of the Treasury, traveled to New York to put money, to put cash in the trust companies that were seeing runs on the banks. Joe, what I also learned is that Pierpont Morgan, J.P. Pierpont Morgan, singular took control, badgering and harassing and threatening in order to get the banks to put up money to save trust company after trust company. Why? Because he knew if one failed, the panic would get worse, that there was no stopping it. That today, Joe, seems a long time ago when we have the Federal Reserve in the way, but the conduct those few days when Silicon Valley Bank failed and that announcement on a Friday afternoon, I had a sense that all banks were trembling at that point. Am I exaggerating, Joe, or was there genuine fear in the biggest and the smallest?
Well, I think the thing that created the surprise with Silicon Valley Bank was discovering that actually all of the regulations that we had brought in after the last panic in 2008 had not been sufficient to protect us from a bank of that size running into trouble. So I think from that perspective, it was an instructive moment for a lot of investors and a lot of depositors. But I mean, one thing that I want to point out that we saw in the heat of that particular crisis, and then in the month since then, is depositors have proven that they are actually pretty discerning. So the deposit flight has tended to come from banks where there might be reason to worry about what's lurking on the balance sheet. It's not clear to me at all that all banks have been equally affected by that. But I do think that all banks do seem to be more equally affected by this general depositor flight in pursuit of higher returns. So I think that it's becoming, I think it might be a little misleading to think about what we've gone through as a form of bank panic or a bank run. It's more like a mass reallocation that is going on now that the interest rates have hit a certain point.
There's news in Germany, and Joseph Sternberg is going to help us because this is about the war in Europe, the energy challenge that Europe and America and everyone chases, and nuclear energy itself. Joseph Sternberg, member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. He writes political economics. He's in London. I'm John Batchelor.
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Truth is, Ohio, when it comes to broccoli salad, you got the secret ingredient on lock. Miracle Whip. You know it, your neighbors know it, heck, everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows it. That tangy zip of Miracle Whip is the reason why Ohio's broccoli salad runs circles around everybody else's and never gets winded. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip right where it belongs in all your favorite recipes. Buy Miracle Whip at your local grocery store and get your tang on, Ohio.
It's Cybersecurity Awareness Month. LifeLock is here with tips to help protect your identity. Use strong passwords, set up multi-factor authentication, report scams, and update your software. And for comprehensive identity protection, LifeLock is your best choice. LifeLock alerts you to suspicious uses of your personal information and fixes identity theft, guaranteed, or your money back. Start your protection today with a 30-day free trial at LifeLock.com. Use promo code NEWS. Terms apply.